Contracts, contracts, contracts. Everyone's getting a new contract this week. Justin Jefferson signs a massive deal, resetting the market, so to speak, for the wide receivers in the NFL. But I would argue that the bigger contract this week, and maybe even more important for a franchise's success, Pete, is Tim Connelly's one-year extension with the Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. They're both big, yep. But for a lot of reasons, I think Connelly's deal is better. I really, truly do.
As far as the impact on the team, I think that you're absolutely right. I love JJ. We all know he's the best receiver in football, but
yes.
You know, you look at Tim Connelly and you see what he's done and some of the trades that at first, especially the Rudy trade, people are kind of looking at him going, hey, man, who is this guy and what is he doing? He's taking apart our team. But as it's played out, obviously that trade has worked out very, very well, I think, for the Timberwolves. Then he grabbed Anderson, D'Angelo Russell, who, you know, I don't know, did he ever fit here very well, Dave? Yeah. Did you feel? I mean, kind of up and down.
He made some
right?
contributions, but he yeah. wasn't a pivotal piece.
Did he? No. Did he make contributions?
I didn't say what kind of contributions. Yeah, I just said some contributions.
That was good.
Everyone makes some.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler made some.
I'm still a Jimmy Butler guy personally, but
drama, you're not going to find any better. Go ahead.
No, that's true. But you know, that trade was another big trade. You know, Mike Conley is one of those unsung heroes,
Tim.
Right? I mean, or what's that?
Tim Conley.
No, well, but Mike Conley, the player.
Mike Conley, the player. My fault. The sorry, I'll be quiet.
Just all part of this D'Angelo Russell thing, you know, and I just think that was a trade that kind of helped us out in a lot of different ways. We picked up draft picks. We also got Alexander Walker. Yep. I mean, that was something that really boosted, I think, the Timberwolves. But, you know, as much as I wanted to like D'Angelo Russell, I just didn't feel like he fit. And I don't know that he felt like he fit. And that's why, you know, that turned into a great trade. And then when you get Anthony Edwards, you're going to have to pay him the kind of money they did but the reality is that guy the best maybe in the NBA and maybe for the next 5-6 years? Is that the most exciting player? I'd mm-hmm. say he's really close.
Yeah, Pete, I think that's a good point. That Conley trade, I think, in my mind, is the more important trade than the Rudy Gobert trade. It wasn't as high yeah. profile, but getting Alexander Walker back as a throw-in, really, for that trade and, mm-hmm. and him turning into a really valuable piece off the bench when you're kind of scraping for money at certain places was so important. And, of course, just the fit. Conley just yep. fit this team better. However, overarching issue, I disagree with both of you. Anytime you can sign the best non-quarterback in the league to a long-term deal, okay. that is the better deal.
Okay, that so is, first of all, the idea that the Conley deal was big, value-wise, yes, it was not nearly as pivotal of a deal to the success of this team as the Rudy Gobert deal. However, I agree with you. Down the stretch, I don't know that Mike Conley, especially in the playoffs, I don't know that he got enough credit for what he did, just right. to being that veteran presence in the locker room and on the floor. But here's my point. The deal in terms of what it will do for the team, I think, and again, always want to hear your take on this, on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. In terms of what the deal does for the team, I think Connelly being here one more year, because the Wolves are poised to win right now.
Yeah.
And him being here and somehow making it work, if they can somehow, if they don't mind paying the extra money, and we'll talk ownership later, if everybody comes back, that's great. But Justin Jefferson still doesn't have an established quarterback to catch from. And if you try to tell me Sam Darnold is, you can just leave. A four-year deal is great. It's a great deal. But how long is it going to take to see the fruits of that if he doesn't have the numbers right away?
Yeah.
And the Vikings, by the way, with all the stuff that they had to do this offseason, are not one or two away from winning. Three, this deal may actually be better for the other wide receivers around him, Jordan Addison, I'll throw T.J. Hockenson. J.J.'s going to get double teamed. He's going to get everybody's best. But he can fight through that, and that's great. But the problem is, you know, whether we're a young quarterback, because we haven't seen J.J. McCarthy yet. How's that going to work? So in terms of sure thing, what we know, I think the Connelly deal is better for the Wolves right now than Justin Jefferson is for the Vikings.
Yeah, my issue with the Connelly deal is it's, like you've already mentioned, it's a one-year deal. It's just kicking the can one year down the road to see what happens with this ownership situation, who's going to be in charge, because that's what the opt-out was Connelly could leave if the ownership was crazy or in flux.
By the
or
way,
all of these different
that's
things.
A brilliant stipulation to have in your contract. I mean, well done.
Yep. So that was the whole deal where, oh, he might be leaving because of all this crazy stuff that's happening with A-Rod Lore and Taylor. It's a 3 to 4 year window. They're kicking the can down 1 year. Sure, that gives one more year of success, but just anytime you could get the best dang non-quarterback in the league in the state of Minnesota long term, I have a hard time hearing just about any argument against it. And I understand there's nuance to it, but I want the best player on my team, and we got that, and that's important.
Yeah, they had no choice but to sign him.
They had to do it. I don't disagree with you guys. And I think the world of Justin Jefferson. I truly do. I have all the way back through his LSU days. Look at all the receivers that LSU has put in the NFL. Now, I will point out this, though, guys, and this is my one pushback, and people probably don't want to hear it. But, okay, so in the last 3 years, he is the number one receiver in all of the NFL. That's not even arguable because it's yards per game. He's above Tyreek Hill. He's above Cooper Kupp, Adams, Lamb, Chase, Brown, all of them. He's the guy. So that's fantastic. But the list I just went off, if somebody's available there ever, you do have to think about, all right, well, how much money do we give to JJ? Okay, that's great. We know what the number is. And then how about some of the other guys? At some point, when is everybody else getting paid? And I think the problem that we're getting into a little bit with the Vikings is, how about our offensive line? Has our offensive line improved enough for JJ? He had probably a better offensive line at Michigan than we do at the Vikings. I know that sounds crazy.
No, it doesn't.
But
it doesn't at all.
And all we do is brag about, well, we've got this left tackle. Well, we do have this left tackle, and he's pretty good. But I don't know that he's as good as advertised, only because I've been at practices. I've watched a lot of games. I've seen it on film. I think he's very good. I don't think he's one of the very best, and I think everybody else keeps putting him in that sort of category. So that's where I kind of differ. You've got a lot of money in one guy, a lot of money. And it's kind of like when we had Kirk Cousins with all the money that went into Kirk, all of a sudden you don't have the money for the offensive line, right? So there's a lot of, you know, back and forth that I go on when I'm thinking about this JJ thing. And the money had to do it. You had to do it because he is Anthony Edwards of the Vikings. I mean, he's likable. He's electric. He gives you everything. I just wonder this. Is he that much different than the 10th best receiver in the NFL? He's better by something, but how different is that, guys?
I love the take, and I love that you're willing to put it out there, but I will disagree. I think Justin Jefferson is way better than the 10th wide receiver.
He's
25 years old, okay? He's had coming out of the gate in the first season he played. Had Mike Zimmer done the right thing and started him game one, if Mike Zimmer wasn't such a stick in the mud, he would have come out of the gate with 3 consecutive 1,000-yard receiving seasons, and then before he got hurt, probably would have been 4 if he hadn't gotten hurt last year. And he's 25, and he can fight through single coverage. He can fight through double coverage. He'll go across the middle. He'll run the deep route. I mean, this kid is really it just because he can catch, and he can catch if it's on catching ability alone. Fine, he's all over. However, just his ability and the toolkit that he has makes him one of the, if not the best wide receiver in the NFL.
And Pete, really, the money is not actually that. Of course, it's a huge amount, but as far as what the Vikings are owing to different people, they have a lot of cap space still. It was structured in such a way that they are going to have over $50 million in cap space next year, and then the year after that, $122 million, with a lot of these important guys still signed through that time, with like Hockenson and O'Neal and Jefferson. All those guys are already signed through that season. They're going to have a lot of money to spend, even with this deal going forward, just the way it's structured.
Well, let's all remember this. What I said was, he's the best receiver in the NFL. But what I also said was, how different is he from the 10th or even the 12th best receiver in the NFL? And that's, I do think that's really, really important, because that's why I was one of the guys out there that would not have been going crazy had we done any kind of a trade. They say that, by the way, the administrative side of this has said, oh yeah, we never even entertained that idea. That there is no way that's true. There's just no way that's true.
100%. I agree with you 100%. So here's the top 10 last year, top 10 receivers in the NFL. Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I have no idea. Is it Puka Nacua?
Puka Nacua.
Sorry. A.J. Brown, DJ Moore, Brandon Ayuk, Nico Collins, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper. Is there any one of those guys, maybe aside from, let's say, Tyreek Hill or CeeDee Lamb, that you would take over Justin Jefferson?
Now, there's the question, though, is do you take? I'm not saying you take him over him. I'm saying that,
okay,
his production value is phenomenal. We all know that. Justin Jefferson is the man. I mean, he does it all for the Vikings on the outside. But how different is that from Devontae Adams? How different is that from some of the receivers on the outside that we all know CeeDee Lamb is pretty unbelievable, guys? The guy had nearly 1,800 yards last year. So,
I'll tell you how different it is. Here you go. Right. 2 years ago, Justin Jefferson, 1,809 for yardage. Number 10 receiver, Terry McLaurin, 1,100. Touchdowns. Yeah. Now, touchdowns, you only get touchdowns. That's interesting because he only had 8 2 years ago and McLaurin had 5. So that does go to your argument.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the production, you know, the production that they can give. And again, this is nothing negative about Justin Jefferson at all. I'm just saying the closeness of the 10th from the first is closer than I think people think it is.
I would never disagree with you, but I disagree a little bit, but I respect – I respect the take, and when you really do break down the numbers, I'm looking at it now, like average per catch, Terry McLaurin was better 2 years ago than Justin Jefferson by a whole yard. So maybe you're changing my mind in real time, Pete. I don't know. love to take your calls on this as we move throughout the show. We'll talk about some Timberwolves ownership as well later on. You can always get us on the stylesfinancial.com talking text line, 651-461-9226. We are out at 11:30 today for Inside Twins, so we've got a whole lot to get to this morning, including coming up next, Caitlin Clark. It sounds like she's being left off Team USA's roster at the Olympics. I think this could be a miss. We'll discuss it next. Caitlin Clark is going to be left off the Team USA basketball roster this summer at the Olympics, it sounds like. Yeah. Sounds like the story's breaking yesterday, overnight. She is not in. She is not on the roster. Of course, we don't know that 100% for sure yet, but there's enough stories out there that makes it sound like it is. I think this is a huge miss. I really do. I understand all of the – I guess I don't understand the logic of it. I don't. I mean, she is – right. I read a great article this week about that, how the WNBA is enjoying more popularity than ever. You know, it's not a moment. It's a movement, and I agree with that. I've long enjoyed watching the WNBA. It's great basketball. I think leaving your biggest star of the game, and I will argue with anybody who thinks that Caitlin Clark – is not the biggest star in the WNBA right now. Leaving her off the roster is a mistake. Not only does she deserve to be there because of her statistics, she is absolutely the biggest draw right now in the WNBA today. She's everywhere, and there's a reason for that. Yeah. And not having her on the Olympic team to play in the biggest spectacle, the biggest sporting event that goes on in a four-year cycle is a huge miss.
I could not disagree
with
you
more. Tell me I'm
wrong. Yep, I could not disagree with you more. One,
go ahead.
She does not deserve to be on that team.
Why?
Per statistics. Look at that roster and tell me who you take her over. There is
Diana Taurasi.
No, you need a veteran presence on that team like Diana Taurasi, who has been there before, done that, knows exactly what she's doing. I don't think there is a single player over you would take over her. Second off, it's an insult to women's sports to say, oh, well, she's the big star. She's the draw. We have to include her because she is the draw. Like you said, this is a movement. You should not have to include your popular player just because they're popular when they should not necessarily be on that team. You should not kowtow and appease the people that are saying, oh, well, you know, you're not going to get as many viewers because she doesn't exactly deserve it.
I didn't say
it.
They weren't going to get as many viewers.
She will. I know you didn't, but I've heard other people. But I don't think that you need to appease those people. Women's sports and this team has its own right to exist, its own entity. And I don't think that you need Caitlin Clark for that. Also, Where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought. Go ahead. Respond.
I think you're wrong. It's not about needing her for eyeballs and all those things. It's the fact of the matter is she deserves to be there. She is in the top 20 in points right now in the league. She's 13th in points per game. She's got 13 points per game this season. You know, she's even better. She can shoot. Shooting percentage. Her shooting percentage is incredible. She's shooting 32% from three-point range. Yes, there's some better, but I disagree. I don't think you need a quote-unquote veteran presence in Diane Taurasi because this is about, you know what this is about, and I truly do believe this. This is a politics thing. There for some reason right now, there is a lot of jealousy in the WNBA over what Caitlin Clark is and what she's done. And I don't get it. I don't get it. She's a great player. She's a phenomenal player. The fact that she didn't go to the USA basketball camp over the summer or in the spring was because she was trying to win a national championship with Iowa. It's exactly what you want your player to do. She's dedicated. She belongs there for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is her play. But you want your best players from your league and your country putting on the USA. Yes, there's going to be more chances for her, but she deserves to be there.
Yeah, I just don't think you take her over any single player on that roster. I think the roster is so deep, and that is the issue, is there are so many great players, American players in the WNBA, that there's just nobody. And I know you say Diana Taurasi, and I think that's the sticking point there.
Because she has been outspoken about not liking Caitlin Clark, which doesn't help the idea that this is a political thing, which is also garbage.
Well, so the other thing that came out of this story was the unnamed sources supposedly were saying, well, you know, she would be the 15th player on this team. She would get almost no playing time, and the masses would be mad because she's not going to get playing time. And I think that's kind of fair, to be
that's
honest.
Stupid.
I think that's a fair argument.
Not. Then don't have all-star games either because not everyone's going to play the whole time.
Guys, how about this? How about the fact that, A, I think she has the numbers that add up to everything that you'd want to have for somebody to be at least a part of the Olympic team. When I look at her numbers, and Dave, you said the numbers, unless I'm looking at something wrong, I'm seeing that Caitlin Clark is actually averaging 16.8 points per game. But in any case, which
you're right. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong column.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
But that puts her at number 13.
Yes.
So you're telling me that somebody who's brand new to the WNBA, who's lighting it up, so to speak, she's doing great with the rebounds as well. The assists, you throw in everything and you say, oh, okay, this gal's not going to come in there because she's not as good as these next more people that have already been there before and they've got experience. This kid has experience, guys. I mean, she's played under pressure for her entire life.
Iowa,
she had to carry the daggone team at times. Good players around her, I don't mean that. I just mean that she was always the focal point, and yet she still did it. She has that same kind of an electricity, I think, as you see in somebody like Anthony Edwards, where they get on the court, you want to watch them. And I think everybody would want to watch her. So her numbers are there. Her ratings are there. And that's probably what ticks off some of these other gals is, well, but she's ratings, she's this. She's ratings, but she also can back it up with her numbers. And so I don't know how you don't have her on the team. And I'll tell you this. If you're NBC and you're running the Olympics and they're not going to put Caitlin Clark on the women's basketball team, I'd be sitting there at NBC going, Are you kidding me, guys?
I'm sure they are.
How do we get this fixed? Yeah, I think
they're. I'm sure they are. But yeah. Let's not forget the fact that she's averaging 16 points a game on
almost
a team
17.
That's awful.
Terrible.
It's easier to average more points on a bad team because you're going to have the ball every time.
But also, everybody is bringing their best game at her every single night.
Yeah.
And she's still doing it.
But we're talking about her numbers and Caitlin Clark's numbers. Let's look at the rest of this team and what are their numbers. What's Nafisa Collier averaging points and rebounds? What's Chelsea Gray averaging? What is her shooting percentage? What is Sabrina Ionescu, Jewel Lloyd, Kelsey Plum? This is the who's who of WNBA greats. She isn't better than them right now. She's just not all around
she's
game.
She's better than Diana Taurasi.
She's not better than these players. Diana Taurasi gets a pass because of who Diana Taurasi
yes.
is.
Yes.
But wait a minute.
But that's not fair.
Why does she get a pass?
Maybe she
should. You're saying you can't let Caitlin Clark go on there because she gets a pass because, oh, she was the best basketball player in college basketball for the last couple of years, and she's lighting it up now in the WNBA. So I don't think you can use that part of the argument. I think, guess what?
Yeah, Caitlin Clark's never going to get the experience if you don't give it to her now, because Diana Taurasi got the experience when she was younger, and that's why she was so dominant.
Well, and here's the
reality.
There
comes a point where everybody gets cut. Everybody. I remember saying this when Adrian Peterson was here, and I said to people, here's the craziest thing you're going to think about. Someday he's not going to be good enough to make a roster. It happens to everybody, yep. The greatest players in the game.
Here's the reality. Neither Diana Taurasi nor Caitlin Clark are going to play real minutes on this team. Neither of them would have. If Caitlin Clark was on this team, she would not play real minutes because Chelsea Gray, Jewel Lloyd, Sabrina Ionescu, Kelsey Plum, they're going to take the bulk of those minutes because they are better right now at the sport of basketball in the WNBA. They're not as popular, but they are better.
Okay.
But she that's not that. I don't even know if I'd argue against that, but I would say that, but she still needs to be there. It's not a matter of how much she plays. It's she deserves to be there. Where she sits right now, she should be on the bench. But that also means, you know what? She gets a couple of minutes during the Olympics. Maybe it even stretches out a little further if she gets hot. And then suddenly everybody starts looking over at their TVs and says, wow, Caitlin Clark's starting to light it up. She just hit 4 out of the last 5 or something like that. And that's where the excitement level is, because everybody has been following this person for so long. And this is a great opportunity at her age to be able to go to the Olympics. I don't know how they keep her out. I think it's crazy.
Last I checked, when you put together a team, you want to make sure you have a good bench because you're always only one play away from someone getting hurt.
Yeah,
and what happens then? Now you got Caitlin Clark to come in off the bench.
The one place I would like to see Caitlin Clark is the 3v3 team.
That'd be fun.
A different Olympic sport. I think that would be a fun place that she could start her Olympic journey. I don't think she is on that team either, however.
Fun discussion, gentlemen.
Good one.
I love the talk. I love that we disagree, and I love you both. We'll take a quick break, come back. We'll do the fast break. You're listening to The Huddle. This might be the only running I do on a Sunday. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it is for me. It's going to be beautiful. Maybe I'll bike, though. Biking sounds good. Nice. It's going to be absolutely beautiful outside. Let's get this thing running and gunning, though, like the introduction says. We're going to start with Pete today on the fast break. Coaching carousel is eternal, and a big shark is reportedly putting up some big money to try and get their guy. The Los Angeles Lakers have reportedly offered a contract worth upwards of $100 million to lure back-to-back NCAA title-winning coach Dan Hurley away from UConn. Pete, simple question for you. Any coach around the league, any sport right now, you have an unlimited budget. Who are you going and getting for what Minnesota team?
Oh wow. So you then shifted it to a Minnesota team. Wow. That makes it a heck of a lot more difficult. I'm not really sure. You know, I've been following the Danny Hurley thing for a while now. I know he goes by Dan, but he used to be Danny Hurley back in the day. But, I don't know. You know, the Gopher job, I love what PJ's doing, but if we had the opportunity to go out somewhere and actually pay some incredible money, I'd almost try to yank one of these guys out of the retirement side of things that we've seen happening over time. And, whether it's somebody like Alabama, and you go out there and you say, well, you know what, this guy, is he really done? Because I'm not sure that he is. I would like to see who we could get with that kind of money. But I don't think that the Gophers are in that position right now to want to make a change, but it sure would be interesting to see somebody coaching Gopher football that has been to the national championship. I would look for whoever we could on that.
Does Lou have one more push in him, one more season, Pete?
You talking about Lou Holtz?
Lou Holtz have one more in him?
I love Coach, but Coach is not really ready for it, man. But if he was, I would go right there. That's exactly where I'd go. Yeah.
Dave, you got an answer?
Can I bring back somebody? This is purely for my own entertainment, and it's nothing against Rocco Baldelli because I do like him. But I'd love Ron Gardenhire for another season. Not only is he, I think in terms of what he did with his teams in the early 2010s area, nobody got more out of their team than Ron Gardenhire did. But he was just entertaining. I mean. Yeah. Nobody could run a press conference, and he could – I wish in someday in my life I get to be like him. He said whatever the heck he wanted, and he didn't care if you didn't like it. He didn't. He just did what he wants. I remember times where he'd get ejected from games and be like, "Yeah, I just didn't feel like watching anymore." I mean, in terms of pure entertainment, no one's better than Guardy. I would love to have him back again. But again, no disrespect to Rocco Baldelli. I love him and think he does a great job.
No, this question was, you know, you may love the coaches right now, but just. Perfect world, unlimited money. You can have any coach on any Minnesota team. Who you taking?
I want Guardy back.
Dave, we'll go back to you here. We're well into the Minnesota Wilds offseason as the Stanley Cup Finals started last night. But obviously, because of those Stanley Cup Finals still going on, not a lot of like actual moves, not a lot of player and personnel movement at this point. But we're getting pretty close. We're getting pretty close to some of those dates where you're going to say, this guy is not on the team anymore. Free agency, trades, draft, all of those things are around the corner for the Minnesota Wild. So my question for you, Dave, in an ideal world where those Parise and Suter contracts maybe are off the books this year instead of next year, what is your one ideal move that you think would make this team so much better? And then on the flip side of it, what's a realistic move you think they can make this offseason?
I mean, realistically, I don't know that it's going to be a lot, because what they have to do at this point is figure out you've got extensions, right? I mean, I think everybody agrees that Brock Faber has to be re-signed to something, I think, pretty
large. That's a move. That's a realistic good answer.
My realistic move, I would like Brock Faber signed long-term. If there was a ton more money, which there isn't, gosh, that's a great question. I'd love to find another young, let's say second line center, just to kind of to buoy this bunch a little bit. I think last year, I guess the season, it feels like the season ended so long ago because we've just been watching the playoffs at this point. But I just think they need a little more scoring punch. They need someone else who's not Kirill Kaprizov. Because if you take Kirill out, and teams always went after him. I mean, we saw it a bunch of times, and a lot of times unfairly. And I thought officials certainly seemed to let it go quite a bit. But there are some young guys coming up. So I still would like to see I want a younger scorer. I want, like, somehow it would be great if the Wild could jump up and get the number one overall pick and get that Celebrini kid from Boston, because he's exceptional. It's not going to happen. But I'd like to see one more kind of secondary scorer.
Is there a chance to get another goalie, guys? I mean, is that a position
well, they've got the
that
one
you
the
look
pipeline.
At where you say we need to do something here or no?
Well, I think they got the one in the pipeline, right?
You've got Jesper Wallstedt.
But is
down
he there?
Yeah. He's there. He looked pretty good, I think, down the stretch. And I think with some good time. So the really interesting thing is you have three good goalies, I think. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury's maybe got one more year, and he's got one more year. He's under contract. But Philip Gustafson is kind of the interesting wild card, because he's going to be pushed by Jesper Wallstedt, and he has a legitimate argument of being a number one goalie on a lot of teams in the NHL. So what are you going to do? You know, are you going to hang on to him, or could you maybe move him for something bigger at some point in a position of need?
I mean, hey, if you're in a good spot, that is a good chip to have in your deck.
If it can be done,
a potential number one goalie if you are overflowing with goalie talent, like. You know, hopefully if Wallstedt turns out to be what many people think he could be sooner than later, then you're going to have that in your pocket. Pete, we're going to go back to you. We're in a very important two weekends for Gopher football as recruits are on campus for the Summer Splash events. And that recruiting is already paying dividends. Pete, Gophers picked up some commitments over the weekend, including in-state defensive tackle Abu Terawali, I think I said that correctly. With that commitment, 5 of the top 10 players in the state of Minnesota for this session are already committed to the Gophers, and that makes it 5 straight years where the top in-state commitment will be playing for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. The in-state recruiting by PJ Fleck over the last number of years has really, really picked up. It's exciting to see. Pete, my question for you, is that going to be translating onto the field this year and in the future?
You know, I really do think so, and I know that there's a gentleman out there who's going to say, oh, there's Pete with the rose-colored glasses again. But I really like, you know, seeing what they've been able to do, the players they have been able to either keep here or go out and return to Minnesota. And you know it, Charlie, you've been seeing all these guys over the last probably 6 months or so. I'm impressed with whatever it is that PGA Fleck and the coaching staff are doing to recruit these guys. Keep it up, because it's been phenomenal. I love what they want to be a part of the University of Minnesota world. And it's I'm impressed. I think that the talent levels that we've got that I've already seen myself with my own eyes, and then these add-ons, I think that the Gophers are going to be far more competitive than I would have thought 6 months ago or at the end of the season. I'm very excited about what I see and what they've done in-state. It's really impressive.
Yeah, that in-state thing, it's just been so huge for PJ and his team.
We got
and
them it, all.
It really kind of shows what happens when the local team has at least some measure of success when these guys are growing up. Because, you know, these guys have been watching PJ Fleck Gopher teams since they were 12, 11 yep. years old, and seeing that success, seeing some of that turnaround. They haven't been great every year, but they've at least had some sustained success, particularly in bowl games. And you're really seeing the fruits of PJ's labor over a long period of time. Dave, we're going to move on to you for mm-hmm. the last question. MLB All-Star voting is open. And an interesting article in The Athletic just came out predicting that Twins will have one sole representative for the Midsummer Classic. That will be Ryan Jeffers. Again, that's just a prediction. We don't mm-hmm. actually know. It's voting. It's all of these different things. But that's The Athletic's prediction for the Midsummer Classic. So, easy question here, Dave. Who do you have making it for the Twins?
Well, I still want to see – I think Jeffers is a great call. I'd love to see it, right? I mean, he's got great numbers this year. He's batting well. He's slugging well. I mean, he's been clutch, right? Home runs are awesome. I think you could make it. I want to see what Royce Lewis does in the next couple weeks. I know that the injury is a bummer to him, and it's not enough games. But I mean, he is the best player on the roster. We all know that. But it's about numbers. I think you could make an argument for Willie Castro, but shortstop's a tough position to break in. And I think you could even make an argument for Carlos Santana mm-hmm. and his 9 home runs this year. I mean, all three of those guys, I think you could make a really, really great argument for. I would have said Pablo Lopez, but not 100% sure after the last couple this game. So I think you could have said any one of those three guys could do it. Obviously, Ryan Jeffers and the catcher position is probably the easiest path in there.
Yeah. I don't think Royce Lewis is the best player on the team. I think that's far and away Carlos Correa is the best player on the Minnesota Twins. You look at what he does defensively, it's not even close. Royce is a very good defender. He's fun at the plate, but Carlos Correa is the best player on that team. But back to your point.
Potentially. How about best potential?
Sure. Okay, that's fine. I can accept that. You look at the catcher position. The AL will probably take 3 catchers. There are really only 3 potential catchers that the American League can take. So Ryan Jeffers is the easy answer. He's probably the 3rd catcher taken behind Salvador Perez and Adley Rutschman, who are both phenomenal. But he's probably taken just because of that. And you're right. I mean, Willie Castro is not going to make it as the jack-of-all-trades guy.
Correa,
defensively, so good. But the offensive numbers just aren't good enough for an all-star game this year. Santana, all of your big, you know, bruising home run hitters are first baseman, and he's not the best of them. So it feels like it's Ryan Jeffers, and that's it. That seems like the obvious answer to me. Pete, do you have a differing opinion?
No, I totally agree with you. And I would also say Carlos Santana is a great player, but when you look at his batting average, you just kind of go, wow, this guy is not an all-star. He's got some numbers. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Charlie, you could make a really good argument for Carlos Correa. When you look at his numbers and what he's done this year, I mean, he doesn't have as many games, but he's shortstop.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to position. Like we said, mm-hmm. catcher is probably the easiest one to make it because you don't have to necessarily have the all-star numbers because catchers just don't generally hit that well. So it feels like it would be tough to get Correa in there. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I think mm-hmm. he's deserving of it. I think his defensive ability speaks for itself, and he's been okay with the bat. He's not been bad.
I still like Royce Lewis better, but that's just me. That's fair.
Yep.
That's
all fair. Right, guys.
That's it.
Let's get into it.
Coming up next.
Go ahead.
Charlie's going to rip me even more because I'm going to talk about the new Vikings jerseys. I think I'm the only person in the world that doesn't like them. We'll talk about it next. This might be the only running I do on a Sunday. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it is for me. It's going to be beautiful. Maybe I'll bike, though. Viking sounds good. Nice. It's going to be absolutely beautiful outside. Let's get this thing running and gunning, though, like the introduction says. We're going to start with Pete today on the fast break. Coaching carousel is eternal, and a big shark is reportedly putting up some big money to try and get their guy. The Los Angeles Lakers have reportedly offered a contract worth upwards of $100 million to lure back-to-back NCAA title-winning coach Dan Hurley away from UConn. Pete, simple question for you. Any coach around the league, any sport right now, you have an unlimited budget. Who are you going and getting for what Minnesota team?
Oh, wow. So you then you shift to a Minnesota team. Wow. That makes it a heck of a lot more difficult. I'm not really sure. You know, I've been following the Danny Hurley thing for a while now. I know he goes by Dan, but he used to be Danny Hurley back in the day. But, I don't know. You know, the Gopher job, I love what PJ's doing, but if we had the opportunity to go out somewhere and actually pay some incredible money, I'd almost try to yank one of these guys out of the retirement side of things that we've seen happening over time. And, whether it's somebody like Alabama, and you go out there and you say, well, you know what, this guy, is he really done? Because I'm not sure that he is. I would like to see who we could get with that kind of money. But I don't think that the Gophers are in that position right now to want to make a change. But it sure would be interesting to see somebody coaching Gopher football that has been to the national championship. I would look for whoever we could on that.
Does Lou have one more push in him? One more season, Pete?
You talking about Lou Holtz?
Lou Holtz have one more in him?
I love Coach, but Coach is not really ready for it, man. But if he was, I would go right there. That's exactly where I'd go. Yep.
Dave, you got an answer?
Can I bring back somebody? This is purely for my own entertainment, and it's nothing against Rocco Baldelli because I do like him. But I'd love Ron Gardenhire for another season. Not only is he, I think in terms of what he did with his teams in the early 2010s area, nobody got more out of their team than Ron Gardenhire did. But he was just entertaining. Nobody could run a press conference. And he could – I wish in some day in my life I get to be like him. He said whatever the heck he wanted, and he didn't care if you didn't like it. He didn't – he just did what he wants. I remember times where he'd get ejected from games and be like, yeah, I just didn't feel like watching anymore. I mean, in terms of pure entertainment, no one's better than Gardy. I would love to have him back again. But again, no disrespect to Rocco Baldelli. I love him and think he does a great job.
No, this question was, you may love the coaches right now, but just perfect world, unlimited money. You can have any coach on any Minnesota team. Who you taking?
I want Gardy back.
Dave, we'll go back to you here. We're well into the Minnesota Wilds offseason as the Stanley Cup Finals started last night. But obviously, because of those Stanley Cup Finals still going on, not a lot of actual moves, not a lot of player and personnel movement at this point. But we're getting pretty close. We're getting pretty close to some of those dates where you're going to say, this guy is not on the team anymore. Free agency, trades, draft, all of those things are around the corner for the Minnesota Wild. So my question for you, Dave, in an ideal world where those Parise and Suter contracts maybe are off the books this year instead of next year, what is your one ideal move that you think would make this team so much better? And then on the flip side of it, what's a realistic move you think they can make this offseason?
I mean, realistically, I don't know that it's going to be a lot, because what they have to do at this point is figure out you've got extensions, right? I mean, I think everybody agrees that Brock Faber has to be re-signed to something, I think, pretty
large. That's a move. That's a good answer.
My realistic move, I would like Brock Faber signed long-term. If there was a ton more money, which there isn't, that's a great question. I'd love to find another young, let's say second line center, just to kind of to buoy this bunch a little bit. I think last year, it feels like the season ended so long ago because we've just been watching the playoffs at this point. But I just think they need a little more scoring punch. They need someone else who's not Kirill Kaprizov. Because if you take Kirill out, and teams always went after him. I mean, we saw it a bunch of times, and a lot of times unfairly. And I thought officials certainly seemed to let it go quite a bit. But there are some young guys coming up. So I still would like to see – I want a younger scorer. I want somehow it would be great if the Wild could jump up and get the number one overall pick and get that Celebrini kid from Boston because he's exceptional. It's not going to happen, but I'd like to see one more kind of secondary scorer.
Is there a chance to get another goalie, guys? I mean, is that a position
well, they've got the
that
one
you
the
look at where you say we need to do something here or no?
Well, I think they got the one in the pipeline, right?
You've got Jesper Wallstedt.
But is
down
he there?
Yeah. He's there. He looked pretty good, I think, down the stretch. And I think with some good tight. So the really interesting thing is you have three good goalies, I think. Marc-Andre Fleury's maybe got one more year, and he's got one more year. He's under contract. But Filip Gustavsson is kind of the interesting wild card because he's going to be pushed by Jesper Wallstedt, and he has a legitimate argument of being a number one goalie on a lot of teams in the NHL. So what are you going to do? You know, are you going to hang on to him, or could you maybe move him for something bigger at some point in a position of need?
I mean, hey, if you're in a good spot, that is a good chip to have in your deck.
If it can be done,
a potential number one goalie if you are overflowing with goalie talent, like. You know, hopefully if Wallstedt turns out to be what many people think he could be sooner than later, then you're going to have that in your pocket. Pete, we're going to go back to you. We're in a very important two weekends for Gopher football as recruits are on campus for the Summer Splash events. And that recruiting is already paying dividends. Pete, Gophers picked up some commitments over the weekend, including in-state defensive tackle Abu Tarawali, I think I said that correctly. With that commitment, 5 of the top 10 players in the state of Minnesota for this session are already committed to the Gophers, and that makes it 5 straight years where the top in-state commitment will be playing for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. The in-state recruiting by PJ Fleck over the last number of years has really, really picked up. It's exciting to see. Pete, my question for you, is that going to be translating onto the field this year and in the future?
You know, I really do think so, and I know that there's a gentleman out there who's going to say, oh, well, there's Pete with the rose-colored glasses again. But I really like, you know, seeing what they've been able to do, the players they have been able to either keep here or go out and return to Minnesota. And you know it, Charlie, you've been seeing all these guys over the last probably 6 months or so. I'm impressed with whatever it is that PJ Fleck and the coaching staff are doing to recruit these guys. Keep it up. Because it's been phenomenal. I love what they want to be a part of the University of Minnesota world. And I'm impressed. I think that the talent levels that we've got that I've already seen myself with my own eyes, and then these add-ons, I think that the Gophers are going to be far more competitive than I would have thought 6 months ago or at the end of the season. I'm very excited about what I see and what they've done in-state. It's really impressive.
Yeah, that in-state thing, it's just been so huge for PJ and his team.
He got
and
them it, all.
It really kind of shows what happens when the local team has at least some measure of success when these guys are growing up. Because, you know, these guys have been watching PJ Fleck Gopher teams since they were 11 years old, and seeing that success, seeing some of that turnaround. They haven't been great every year, but they've at least had some sustained success, particularly in bowl games. And you're really seeing the fruits of PJ's labor over a long period of time. Dave, we're going to move on to you for the last question. MLB All-Star voting is open. And an interesting article in The Athletic just came out predicting that Twins will have one sole representative for the Midsummer Classic. That will be Ryan Jeffers. Again, that's just a prediction. We don't actually know. It's voting. It's all of these different things. But that's The Athletic's prediction for the Midsummer Classic. So easy question here, Dave. Who do you have making it for the Twins?
Well, I still want to see – I think Jeffers is a great call. I'd love to see it, right? I mean, he's got great numbers this year. He's batting well. He's slugging well. I mean, he's been clutch, right? Home runs are awesome. I think you could make it. I want to see what Royce Lewis does in the next couple weeks. I know that the injury is a bummer to him, and it's not enough games. But I mean, he is the best player on the roster. We all know that. But it's about numbers. I think you could make an argument for Willie Castro, but shortstop's a tough position to break in. And I think you could even make an argument for Carlos Santana and his 9 home runs this year. I mean, all 3 of those guys, I think you could make a really, really great argument for. I would have said Pablo Lopez, but not 100% sure after the last couple this game. So I think you could have said I think any one of those 3 guys could do it. Obviously, Ryan Jeffers and the catcher position is probably the easiest path in there.
Yeah. I don't think Royce Lewis is the best player on the team. I think that's far and away Carlos Correa is the best player on the Minnesota Twins. You look at what he does defensively, it's not even close. Royce is a very good defender. He's fun at the plate, but Carlos Correa is the best player on that team. But back to your point.
Best potentially. How about best potential?
Sure. Okay, that's fine. I can accept that. You look at the catcher position. The AL will probably take three catchers. There are really only three potential catchers that the American League can take. So Ryan Jeffers is the easy answer. He's probably the third catcher taken behind Salvador Perez and Adley Rutschman, who are both phenomenal. But he's probably taken just because of that. And you're right. I mean, Willy Castro is not going to make it as the jack-of-all-trades guy.
Correa,
defensively, so good. But the offensive numbers just aren't good enough for an all-star game this year. Santana, all of your big, you know, bruising home run hitters are first baseman, and he's not the best of them. So it feels like it's Ryan Jeffers, and that's it. That seems like the obvious answer to me. Pete, do you have a differing opinion?
No, I totally agree with you. And I would also say Carlos Santana is a great player, but when you look at his batting average, you just kind of go, wow, this guy is not an all-star. He's got some numbers. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Charlie, you could make a really good argument for Carlos Correa. When you look at his numbers and what he's done this year. I mean, he doesn't have as many games, but he's a shortstop.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to position. Like we said, catcher is probably the easiest one to make it because you don't have to necessarily have the all-star numbers because catchers just don't generally hit that well. So it feels like it would be tough to get Correa in there. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I think he's deserving of it. I think his defensive ability speaks for itself, and he's been okay with the bat. He's not been bad.
I still like Royce Lewis better, but that's just me. It's fair.
Yep.
It's
all fair. Right, guys.
That's it.
Let's get into it.
Coming up next.
Go ahead.
Charlie's going to rip me even more because I'm going to talk about the new Vikings jerseys. I think I'm the only person in the world that doesn't like them. We'll talk about it next. The new Vikings white-on-white jerseys were released this week. White helmet, white. They're disgusting. I mean, I put it on Instagram. I'm like, am I the only person that thinks these are awful? It looks like a bad knockoff of a Dallas Cowboys jersey, or it looks like you were playing EA Sports NFL and went to design the jerseys and the uniforms and got tired of it because it took too long, and you just went, oh, I'll just take the all-white and go play. I hate them, and I have pretty strong – I love uniforms. I'm a jersey snob. I'm a uniform guy. Like, I think they're awful. I don't like them. And I
kind of like them, man.
You like them?
I think they're all right. You know, I am not a guy who goes into this whole jersey thing, whether it's college or pro, and has a huge love for all that because I think there still is something to be said for tradition and all the rest of it. But – I think like everybody, we got to open up our minds to the fact that, hey, look, we're not everybody. So they want a different type of a look once in a while. I actually think they look pretty good. I'm not so sure. We got to see them in person, right? I mean, we got to see them, whether it's on TV or you're at the game at US Bank or whatever, to really give it I think, an honest look at it. But I thought it looked pretty good, Dave. I thought it was pretty flashy. And that's kind of the direction that you've seen in college football as well with all of this. We're going to do a whiteout, or we're going to do a this, or we're going to do that. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Maybe it's just me because I mean, I don't wear a lot of white because I'm always afraid I'm going to spill something on myself.
Me too.
I don't like the silver helmets. I loved the color rush. Like, what, all purple was great. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm not a fan of this. I'm just not. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
I refuse to have a strong opinion about jerseys. Okay. I can kind of like some. I can kind of dislike some. But at the end of the day, I just really don't care about jerseys at all. I think they're fine. I think that the kids are having fun with them. I think that the Vikings players probably like them. It's a little bit a little fun. It's going to be a whiteout game at the stadium. I don't care.
Did you see the video? I think it's Vikings put out where they convinced them all it's like new uniform, and it ended up being they brought him in. So they bring him into this hallway, and there's a dummy there with a pair of khakis and like a polo shirt, and it said, "These are your new travel uniforms." And they're all and T.J. Hockenson's like, "What? This is for the coaches, right? Like you don't expect
Kirk Cousins
me to wear
once."
Yeah, hey, you know who doesn't participate in this Alabama, Notre Dame, USC, Texas, yeah. Penn State, Georgia, and all of those, I added it up, they've got almost 50 national championships in college football, and they really don't get involved in all of this uniform change
stuff. I mean, Penn State already has the whites, though. That's Penn State's whole thing.
But they don't have to. So when you don't win, you have to do something to get the recruits.
Come on,
so you
man.
Change your uniform. Not a fan of these.
But this is professional, too. You know, this is...
Yeah, we'll see. I got to get a better look at the helmet. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Hour number two coming at you next. The new Vikings white on white jerseys were released this week. White helmet, white. They're disgusting. I mean, I put it on Instagram. I'm like, am I the only person that thinks these are awful? It looks like a bad knockoff of a Dallas Cowboys jersey, or it looks like you were playing EA Sports NFL and went to design the jerseys and the uniforms and got tired of it because it took too long, and you just went, oh, I'll just take the all white and go play. I hate them. And I have pretty strong – I love uniforms. I'm a jersey snob. I'm a uniform guy. Like, I think they're awful. I don't like them. And
I kind of like them, man.
You like them?
I think they're all right. You know, I am not a guy who goes into this whole jersey thing, whether it's college or pro, and has a huge love for all that, because I think there still is something to be said for tradition and all the rest of it. But – I think like everybody, we got to open up our minds to the fact that, hey, look, we're not everybody. So they want a different type of a look once in a while. I actually think they look pretty good. I'm not so sure. We got to see them in person, right? I mean, we got to see them, whether it's on TV or you're at the game at US Bank or whatever, to really give it I think an honest look at it. But I thought it looked pretty good, Dave. I thought it was pretty flashy. And that's kind of the direction that you've seen in college football as well, with all of this. We're going to do a whiteout, or we're going to do a this, or we're going to do that. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Maybe it's just me, because I mean, I don't wear a lot of white because I'm always afraid I'm going to spill something on myself.
Me too.
I don't like the silver helmets. I loved the color rush. Like, when all purple was great. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm not a fan of this. I'm just not. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
I refuse to have a strong opinion about jerseys. Okay. I can kind of like some. I can kind of dislike some. But at the end of the day, I just really don't care about jerseys at all. I think they're fine. I think that the kids are having fun with them. I think that the Vikings players probably like them. It's a little bit out of, you know, a little fun. It's going to be a whiteout game at the stadium. I don't care.
Did you
I
like
see? I don't care.
Did you see the video? I think it's Vikings put out where they convinced them all it's like new uniform, and it ended up being they brought him in. So they bring him into this hallway, and there's a dummy there with a pair of khakis and like a polo shirt, and it said, "These are your new travel uniforms." And they're all, and TJ Hawkinson's like, "What? This is for the coaches, right? Like, you don't expect
Kirk Cousins
me to wear them.
Once."
Yeah, hey, you know who doesn't participate in this? Alabama, Notre Dame, USC, Texas, yeah. Penn State, Georgia, and all of those, I added it up, they've got almost 50 national championships in college football, and they really don't get involved in all of this uniform change stuff.
I mean, Penn
stuff.
State already has the whites, though. That's
just
Penn
saying.
State's whole thing.
But they don't have to. So when you don't win, you have to do something to get the recruits.
Come
so
on,
you change
man.
Your uniform. Not a fan of
these. This is professional, too. You know, this is...
Yeah, we'll see. I got to get a better look at the helmet. All right, we'll take a break, come back. Hour number two coming at you next.